All right. Just a few moments past 4 o'clock on this Monday. My name's Hannah. Thanks for listening to the Homestretch live from Historic Hotel Congress. It is time to welcome back to the show, after a lovely holiday break, my regular guest, Chris Carey, who volunteers his time to select and research our classic picks of the week each week, and then brings them in, shares those findings, and we have a little chat. This week, he's got a big one here. This is Simon and Garfunkel on the docket this week. Welcome back, by the way.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I thought we should, you know, start off the new year with an important album.
Serious album.
And so Simon and Garfunkel's fifth and final studio LP, Bridge Over Troubled Water, came out in January 1970, so 50 years ago. Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel, I mean, of course, they're probably one of the most successful folk rock duos of all time. One of the best-selling acts of the 1960s. You know, amazing harmonies, acoustic guitars that actually border on the avant-garde now and then. They actually, a lot of people don't realize this, that Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel have known each other since grade school. They were friends in grade school, started playing together very early. Their first band they formed, or their first touring act, I guess I should say, or act that performed in front of audiences, they were just 16 and they called themselves Tom and Jerry.
Cute.
Yeah, it's very cute. And so then, you know, following high school, they kind of made their separate ways for a while. Simon released a record of 63, 64, didn't really go anywhere. And then they regrouped a couple years after that and were signed by Columbia Records. Their first record kind of sold poorly. Wednesday Morning 3 a.m. came out in 64. It sold poorly. So after that, they kind of broke up again and kind of tried to do something on their own again. It didn't really work. And then they came back out with Sound of Silence in 1966, which was a success.
Yeah, that one worked.
Yeah, and then that song actually later on got picked up and was part of The Graduate, which was their fourth album, which came out after Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme. And The Graduate in 67, what was kind of cool about that movie, as far as I know, that was the first movie that ever had a singular act doing the whole soundtrack.
That was actually a Film at Five feature early on when I started that Film at Five feature, and I believe you are correct. That's what I found in all my research as well.
And that was a Mike Nichols film, and he loved them, and that that film was so successful that it kind of really launched them from being somebody that was known about and fairly well known to being superstars. And after that, of course, they came out with Bookends, which was a huge success. A lot of the reason was because of The Graduate soundtrack. I mean, there was a time when both Bookends and The Graduate were on the charts at the same time. And so that kind of, you know, those two albums kind of set them up that this album was going to be huge anyway. And so they started recording this album not long after that, but the recording was kind of broken up into two parts, September 68 and September 69, and it was broken up so much because
a whole year.
Part of that was because that was when Art Garfunkel was in Mexico filming Catch 22, which was also a Mike Nichols film. And I mean, not the Catch 22 that's on Hulu right now with George Clooney, which I haven't seen yet. And it's on my list to watch, but this was the 1970 movie based on the Heller novel that had Alan Arkin in it, who I love Alan Arkin.
I love Alan Arkin.
Yeah, I do too. Anyway, that's a great movie if you haven't seen it. But what the funny thing was is I didn't know about this. I did know that Art Garfunkel was in it, but I didn't realize that it was in between that it kind of broke up the recording of Bridge Over Troubled Water. And it put a big strain on the relationship between him and Paul Simon at the time. And they already were getting in some, kind of had a strenuous relationship in that I think that, you know, Garfunkel felt a little bit a second-class citizen in that Simon did all the writing. Even though Garfunkel's voice was great, you know, Simon did all the writing. And also, I didn't know this either, is that Paul Simon originally had a role in Catch 22 but was written out of the script. And so that may have even more strained than I realized. Yeah. And this, you know, this was done by Mike Nichols, who is the same guy who did The Graduate in 67. Like I said, the recording was broken up into basically 2 months. And so there was only 2 months really that they were in the studio on this, but they were about a year apart. The production was shared between Simon and Garfunkel and Roy Haley, who had worked with them on both The Graduate and Bookends. And a lot of people kind of credit the unique harmonies that you see in the later Simon Garfunkel records to Haley and how he recorded them. He actually recorded them typically in something like that. You would record the vocals separately in a booth and then mix them together later. And he felt like he couldn't get the harmonies as beautifully as they sounded when they sang in the mic together.
Oh, so he did it live?
They actually sang in the mic together live when this album was recorded.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. Commercially, when this, you know, and also Haley, he didn't work, he's most famous for working with Simon and Garfunkel, but he also worked with Love and Spoonful, Yardbirds, Blood, Sweat and Tears, and Journey's first record.
Oh.
Yeah. So commercially, this record, like I said, was already destined to be pretty big, but it was pretty big is kind of an understatement. It was a huge album. It topped the charts in 10 different countries and was number one in the US and the UK. It was the best-selling album in the U.S. for not just 1970, but for 1971 and 1972. So it was a best-selling album for 3 years in a row. At the time, this was the best-selling album of all time. And it wasn't eclipsed, I think, until Michael Jackson's Thriller in the 80s. So for a decade, this was the best-selling album of all time.
No wonder Paul Simon was able to date Princess Leia.
Yeah, yeah.
He was doing well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think he met her on Saturday Night Live, and then years later he met his current wife, Edie Brickell, on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I didn't even write that down. I just remembered that. So it was, like I said, it was huge. And it was on the charts for about 2.5 years in the U.S., over almost 3 years. And it was on the top 100 in the U.K. for 5 years. I mean, there's not many albums that do that. I mean, that's pretty crazy. It ended up selling over 25 million copies worldwide. And this was due to the fact, first of all, this really is kind of an amazing album. Like, almost every song on this album, it sounds like a greatest hits record, but it's not. It was just a regular studio album. The big singles on it, of course, were the title track, El Condor Pasa, If I Could, Cecilia, and The Boxer. Initial critical reception, actually, at first, it was kind of got mixed reviews. People, you know, they liked Bookends so much, and because it was a little bit different than Bookends, and that it wasn't...
Oh, so it sort of suffered from that weird comparative thing that happens sometimes.
Yeah, and so, and some people at first didn't think it matched up to Bookends, but that didn't... That was only some people, and within a few years, it was viewed at being kind of at the same level. And, you know, most, you know, I think there's maybe a few people that go back and forth and like one or the other a little bit better. But both of those albums are considered to be, you know, they're kind of their masterpieces. And, I mean, it's on every best of list of all time. It ended up winning six Grammys, including the Album of the Year. And then what was crazy about that is these guys were about as famous as you could get. I mean, they were like... You know, they were like U2 in the 80s or early 90s. They were like Michael Jackson in the 80s. They were about as famous as you could get, and where they couldn't, you couldn't have gotten much, you know, better than they did, and they kind of just went their separate ways. And I don't think it was an intentional breakup. I think what happened is that after they released this album, Art Garfunkel really wanted to pursue his acting career more, and he did get in some more shows, but not any movies, I think, that compared to Catch 22. And then, of course, you know, Paul Simon went out, and in 72, he came out just, you know, 2 years after this album, and he came out with his self-titled Paul Simon, which is an amazing record. And a few years later, you know, a decade later, and with 86, he put out Graceland. And those two albums are as good as this. I mean, it's kind of amazing that, you know, one guy can be involved in so many good records.
This is true. Very impressive.
But, they were also an interesting thing about Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel. Is in 1981 when they did their concert in Central Park. That still ranks as one of the most attended live shows ever. There were over 500,000 people at that show.
Goodness,
that's a big concert.
Yeah,
yeah. I bet you the really good seats were expensive, or at least expensive by 1981 terms.
Yeah,
but yeah, together they're one of the best selling artists of all time. They've sold well over 100 million records. They've got 10 Grammys together, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, they're kind of important.
All of the things. I'm talking with Chris Carey about Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water. Came out right around this time back in 1970, making it 50 years old. Anything else to add?
Yeah, just that I wanted to play The Boxer today, and I know a lot of people love that song, but I thought it was kind of interesting is the whole la la la, you know, the chorus in this. Paul Simon always kind of felt like that was a a failure in his songwriting, that he couldn't come up with something better. And I always thought it was great because it makes it really hooky, right?
Yeah.
Another,
and it makes it a sing-along and it warms the heart and all that stuff.
Yeah, and the, also this album too, they took, even though overall they didn't put as much time into this record as you would imagine for something that was this amazing, they did put over 100 hours over three different sessions recording this song. And I didn't know this. This was pretty cool. So at the time, I mean, you know, in 1970, most people were recording on 8-tracks, and that was like, that was pretty high tech right then. It was 8-track recording. They actually recorded this, they made this album, was recorded as a 16-track, but they did it by synchronizing two 8-track machines together at the same time. So like technically that was like super difficult to synchronize all that at the same time.
Well, and the end result sounds very majestic and produced very, in a very elegant way.
Yes, so very, very cinematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.